What we've been talking about basically is the historicity or the identity of Jesus, of who he is and what he has to say. And the purpose we've done that is because if you remove Jesus, just like this gentleman said, you remove Jesus from the program, and Christianity falls apart like a deck of cards. What is it? It'll be just a social club. So it's very important that we see that Jesus is the center, is not only the beginning and the end, but he is the center of everything. We've talked a little bit about the historicity of Jesus. We've talked a little bit about the acid test of the writers that wrote during his lifetime. We compared histories. Came to the conclusion that Jesus, the man, actually lived. According to Josephus, he did many wonderful things. The Gospels meet the acid test, etc. What we've been talking about, then, is the claim of Jesus. The claim that he is one with the Father. The challenging question that Jeff asks at every door begins with Matthew chapter 7, verse 13 and 14. Who will be saved? Many or few? And then he goes down to that next passage, Matthew chapter 7, verse 20 and 21, to look at the thought that only those that do his will or his Father's will be those that come into heaven. What I find interesting in that passage is that he doesn't say a third person is going to say depart. Who does he say makes that judgment? He will. He will. I think that's interesting because that is just another claim of his divinity. We look at Hebrews chapter 1 as we've talked about. We talked about that he is the heir of all things and through him all things were created. He is the brightness of God's glory. He is the express image of God. In John chapter 14, after speaking to the disciples, and he said, I'm going to go and prepare a place for you. Where I'm going, you can't come after me. What was it that Philip said? Pardon? No. How will we know? Who? Tell us, who is the Father? And Jesus said, yeah, have I been with you so long that you don't see the Father? You see me, you see the Father. So what we're looking at is, and we looked at the testimony and with Paul's input. We now have seven planks of testimony. The testimony of Jesus' own testimony, the I Ams, the testimony of his works, testimony from the Spirit, testimony of God the Father, and his statements that he has made. This is my beloved Son whom I'm well pleased, and this is my beloved Son whom I'm well pleased. Listen to him. The testimony of the empty tomb, the testimony of unbelievers. Well, I've got it there anyway. I must not have transferred it over properly. I've added the seventh plank, and the seventh plank would be the testimony of the demons and the demon-possessed, who even said, Jesus, Son of God, what have you to do with us? Who? Son of God. So that is something we're looking at. But what we're also paused at is that there's a problem. People can't see sometimes Jesus or see God because of their image of him, their own image of him. And we talked a little bit about some of the different aspects of that. Tonight, I'd like to take on just a couple more. We talked a little bit about the heavenly bosom, absolute perfection. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 48, Jesus says, be ye perfect as who is, as the Father is. Be perfect. Who is the perfect, blah, blah, blah. Who among us is perfect? None. Some people see God as so perfect, and he is perfect. Well, I can never be. And so they throw up their hands in disgust and say, might as well just have fun. I'm not going to be able to cut it anyway, right? Well, that's something that I think we can learn from. We can see people's concept of perfection and help them see that Jesus is the perfect one, the perfect sacrifice. We talked a little bit about the picture of meek and mild, and we talked about how Jesus was not meek and mild. He was meek. He was humility under control. But mild kind of leaves a little bit of a strange taste. Perhaps it is because Jesus said, "Don't hinder the little children to come to me." Perhaps it's the image that we teach of Jesus as in VBS, of Jesus being so kind and tender that we somehow have this concept of mild. Go ahead.
There were so many examples of him being mild. He obeyed his mother. He wept. He for lack of a better term. He was kind and he was gentle to all the women that were with him. He thought of his mother who was on the cross. Those are all meek and I think mild things too. But when he cleared the temple, that was not.
No, clearing the temple definitely wasn't mild, not once or twice. But mild is easy to get along. One who does not make waves. Whoa. Did Jesus make a wave? That's what he came to do, was to make a wave? That's not the picture of mild I see. Have that difficulty of when to be bold and when to stand back. That's interesting. That's something. As I was preparing these notes, a young man had passed away. They wrote about him in the Kansas City Star. He was a young man with a beautiful baritone voice and was going to the music, what is it called? Conservatory of Music. What was interesting and very, very chancy, I guess, is the preceding week they had a picture, the Star had another picture of him. He had a picture there of sitting in a tree. It was between the two snowstorms, and we had a couple nice days of weather, and he was sitting in a tree playing drums, and somebody else was playing. He was a person that was described as being mild. He never saw any harm in anybody and never said a harsh word. It's what the obituary said, and that's not Jesus. Jesus spoke the truth and taught the truth. But sometimes that truth needs what? Sometimes it needs a good hard spanking. If you're cooking on the stove and your child comes in and you tell them what? Don't touch the stove. Why do you do that? Because you hate your child? Not at all. You do it because you love them. So when the child goes up and starts reaching for it and you spank their hand and you hurt their feelings and they start bawling and crying, do you love them? Sometimes love means we have to do something else. Well, I want to look real quick at a couple other thoughts here. Absolute perfection, we talked about a little bit. God in a box. God in a box. I think that's an interesting concept where we've heard the phrase mentioned in our door knocking on some of the doors. As somebody talks about your church and your church is God, what are you talking about? God can be confined to these four walls? That you have rights to the God that no one else can have? That's the phrase that some people have used. And so that is something that we need to take in consideration. That the concept is as long as they will jump through the hoops that we give them, then we'll be able to share our God with them. But only if they jump through the hoops. Where's God's grace? It's missing from that whole concept, isn't it? Well, the managing director, real quick. What I mean by that is, you know, when I managed a unit of 25 people, I knew each of those 25 people. And I didn't know their thoughts, but I mean, I knew some of their problems. I knew that when George was having an off day, I could tell it and I could say, "Hey, George, what's going on? What can I help you with?" Or if somebody else had some other concerns, I knew what their patterns were. Those three seasons that I worked as a shift supervisor for the IRS, and I had 500 employees under me, I couldn't do that. Now, I did know, you know, those two or three or four or five that were sore thumbs that, you know, brought themselves to the attention of the authorities. But other than that, no. Met one in I guess it was Sam's the other day. And I'm sitting here saying, oh, my goodness, what is his name? What is his name? That is the image that some people have of God. What am I trying to say? Is that God is so far removed and we are so insignificant that he can't be really interested in me. See how that might hinder somebody from understanding God and God's love for us? Well, our time is up tonight, and I'm sorry. I do have new screen prints that do have the corrections on them. Really want to look at that, the concept here, because I think that this does give us a better picture. People don't withdraw from God without a reason. It's not because they're silly. It's not because they're lazy. Some cases maybe, but it's because their picture of God is not the picture that Jesus gives us. So as we look at the identity of Jesus, we want to look at how he explains his Father and our Father. Our time's up. Bill, if you would, lead us in a word of prayer.